on 1116 SEN, The Right Time with Gavin Krasisca, Nick Hall and Mark Fine.
Well, for various reasons, it's been a while, gentlemen. I wasn't here one Monday, and of course, last Monday being a public holiday, we furloughed the program, but we are now back to core business. Gavin Krasisca is part of Drug and Alcohol Help.
Alcohol and Drug Help.
An important, a little mistake, but a very important facility for the intervention. And what is an intervention? Gavin will tell you in a moment. Process. Also, Sober Living House, connected to Alcohol and Drug Help, is an in-care facility for addicts. And hopefully, the addict comes in and out comes somebody on the road to a long and meaningful and fruitful life in recovery. How are you, Gavin?
I'm well, Fonny. It's like we've had 2 weeks holidays and it's our first day back at work. It's it was a struggle to get here, but I'm all of a sudden excited. It's good to be behind the microphone again. So good to see you.
I copped a spray.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
By?
A stranger.
Mm.
At a pub.
Okay. And what was that about?
About not having the right time on last Monday.
Oh, really? Night. Okay. It was a nice spray then.
Yeah. Interesting that it happened in a pub.
Yeah.
But it was not surprising because he's a publican who is a sober living publican.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And he likes the message and needs the message and needs the grounding. The roots that are laid in his fellowship meetings and on the Monday night, the rituals, the ritualistic part of his recovery is important to him.
Well, working in that environment, he would need every avenue that he could possibly get to stay focused.
Does the books on a Monday night and listens to us.
Okay, excellent.
So, no name, no pack drill, but Dean, if you are listening, and he said, by all means, name me, we are back and speaking to you directly. We feel as though, and hopefully you feel, and everybody who listens feels as though we are talking directly to you. Mick Hall is a key component of the program because he's sort of the reason it exists. I met Mick Hall through our sales team upstairs and thought, yeah, there's an interesting bloke. And they said, oh, can you get him on for a bit of a chat, just as a bit of a sweetener for some advertising? Well, no sooner had I done that than he sparked up a relationship with Craig Harper, and the rest, as they say, is history, and hopefully an important history that leads to a very, not only an ongoing future, but a long and fulfilling one. Mick Hall is of Dayhab, the Rehab Centre, 1-800-329-422. And as recovery and rehabilitation on the way to recovery becomes more important in Australia, names like Dayhab and Sober Living House and Alcohol and Drug Help hopefully will become as important brand names in this country as Foster's and Sportsbet. How are you, Mick?
Top of the evening to you, Finey, and you too, Gav.
How are you, mate? How's things?
Yeah, good, good, good. It's good to be back, you know, like a couple of weeks off, and, you know, I missed the show too, you know, like, and it's, you know, Finey was talking about copping a nice spray.
Well, it wasn't particularly nice.
Wasn't it?
No, he was pretty pointed. Dean said straight out,
good.
You've got a commitment, and I said it was a public holiday, and he said, not for us, it ain't.
Yeah, well, fair enough. Look, apologies for going away.
Yeah, we do apologise for that, you know. And it's amazing how much, you know, this show sort of impacts people, you know. And I was just saying to Gav before the show that I walked out the front of our centre today and there was four or five guys sitting out the front. And they asked me my name and I said, Mick Hall. And they all sort of, you know, I listen to the show every Monday night, you know, and it's a great, you know, thing that people are, you know, tuning in and listening, and then they're seeking help and they're getting help. And I'm not just saying that because of our centre, certainly through, you know, Sober Living Housing and other facilities too, you know, like it's great that people sort of hear our show and not only the people that are already in recovery, but the people that are, you know, out there struggling.
Well, we had the Recovery Academy walk yesterday, finally.
That's
so
right.
It was from the State Library to Fed Square. We had about probably between, rough counting, was 250 to 300, which is a really good,
a good
amount of people. But I was not surprised, but it was nice to see so many families, like mums and dads of kids that have struggled, and we've had people through our service that their families were there, and just the support and I guess their learning and education around addiction, and knowing that they play a huge part in their loved one's recovery. It was nice to see. And a similar thing, so many people come and said, oh, the radio show is fantastic.
Yeah,
we listen religiously. It's really great for us. We learn every week, and you know, it's nice. And that's what this program's about. It's not a treatment call center, but it's certainly an awareness and a show for people to get a little bit more educated around addiction and recovery.
And look, just around that too, Gav, just a bit of a footnote out there to the listeners that the Right Time website was down for a couple of weeks. We had a couple of technical difficulties. It is up. It's meant to be rocking again. It's just taking a little while for Google to recognise it again, but it'll be, you'll see our website. So that's www.therighttime.com.au. And, you know, it's a great resource.
And the important part about the website is sharing of stories.
Yep.
And we've got a few stories up there from previous times. And it's, look, if anyone can take the time just to sit on the computer and email their story in, it's very therapeutic for themselves, but it's also to share their story for other people who may tap into the website just to have a look. And it, you know, that's a part of our stuff is knowing that you've been through what I've been through, Mick, or you've felt what I've felt or suffered how I'd suffered. And it's a part of our ongoing recovery, how we can all get well together.
Great word, therapeutic. There's another thing that it can, another master it can serve, and that is the story each and every addict recovering or even yet to be in recovery, the story of each and every addict, of course, is different. It is complex, and sometimes the retelling of it is painful for the individual. Mm. So it might not be a bad way to put pen to paper or finger to keyboard, have it on the website, and if it does come up, rather than have to tell that story again, you can refer people to the website and say, look, I do have a story to tell, and I've made it public, and it appears on a website called therighttime.com.au, which is connected with a radio station. Maybe read that, and we'll have a chat after you've read it.
Mm. That's a good point, Finey.
And it also allows somebody to write down their story, read it, edit it. If you see it online and think that I don't know if I'm comfortable with that being up there, then resubmit it. Simply resubmit it and ask it to override the one that exists. It'd be your story, and it might be an easier way down the track to retell that story than to do it verbally and face-to-face with somebody.
And we find that with people that call up for the first time that are very fearful of being heard, I guess, and I guess that first conversation they have, it you know, can really help people get started in a change of direction in their lives, and that's what we're all about.
And it breaks, and that's right, it breaks down those fears, doesn't it? Sort of, it knocks down a few walls, you know. It's like the callers or the texting that sort of happens here where we're on the, you know, on the show, you know, like it's that first kind of foot in the door that's really important, you know. That first sort of, I guess it's a step forward into changing, to change.
It's self-realisation, it's admitting, and it is obviously the first or maybe a step in a vision for the future. 9429 1116, there are stories to be told verbally, and this is a great platform for that. And we really encourage questions, stories, successes, failures, the warts and all, the true look at addiction, rehabilitation and recovery. We know that in recent times there has been a huge media emphasis on the growing ICE epidemic, crystal methamphetamine, in this state. And that may in some way, to some addicts who are addicted not to ICE, but to maybe other drugs or to alcohol, gambling or behaviours, it may in some way either minimise their own estimation of their addiction. I'm not part of the current scourge. Mm. Or it may serve another, it may have another negative effect, and that is to make people who have other addictions feel as though there isn't a focus on their particular problem. And if they were to raise their hand and publicly want to tackle their addiction, that there would be less forums, less facilities, less opportunities for that to be addressed, which is anything but the truth, because addiction is tackled as addiction. So for anybody out there, is that a fair notion?
Well, that's absolutely correct, Finney. I mean, and look, I mean, as we've talked about numerous times on this show, that the substance really is, it doesn't really matter what that is. It's what happens in the brain, and it's what's going on inside that compels a person to continue to use something that's destroying them and their life.
But you have stated that it is particularly dangerous because of its highly addictive nature. It just, in and of itself.
From what I've seen, it just gets you really quick. Like, correct. It can take a decade to really slowly smash yourself with alcohol, so to speak.
Yep.
You can take time to, you can drink alcoholically, but then when you cross that line into alcoholism,
yep,
it can take a bit of time. With ice, it takes months.
Less than that.
You know, it takes months to become addicted to it. So it's an interesting concept, isn't it? As in, it may get to the stage where I'm a heavy drinker or an alcoholic drinker, or I'm smoking a lot of dope or whatever it may be, and it's I go into that justification with myself is that, oh, okay, well, I'm not using ice, so I'm going okay.
Yep.
You know, I'm not as bad as them.
Yeah, that's
really scary and dangerous. You're right. And I mentioned a guy I didn't get in there, the CEO of North Ballarat, got this guy to come and talk to our players in 2005 and 2006 when I was coaching there. And he was a chronic cannabis smoker.
Yep.
And I'm telling you, Mick, he was the worst speaker I've ever seen.
Yep.
He couldn't, I thought he was actually joking, because he'd be telling a story and he'd stop. And then he'd ask the boys, as in, can you just let me know where I was at? And I forgot where I was at. And was really absent-minded and really forgetful.
Yep.
And I looked at him, and I was in a pretty bad state of that, in that position when I was coaching the Roosters. And I actually thought to myself, geez, I'm going all right. I've got a job. I'm still functioning.
Yep.
I've still got a family. I've still got a house.
Yep.
And that just justified my use even more.
Well, that's right. And the key word there is justification. Mm. But, I mean, that's part of addiction.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter whether it's ice or whether it's smack or alcohol or what it is. That's always going to come into play. But, I mean, I guess you're right. You know, like other addictions are just as damaging as ice, but they might be over a longer period of time. But they are just as damaging, you know. Like, it's... I guess and we've gone over this 100 times, but I mean, you know, I guess the main thing with ice is the way that it fries a person's brain and it gets them into a psychosis so quickly. That's the really dangerous, sort of violently dangerous part of ice, and that's what makes it hard to deal with, because
erratic behaviours and
delusional. You know, like, yep. so you know, imagining, you know, hearing things that aren't there, seeing things that aren't there, and with a massive heightened kind of paranoia, you know, aggression comes out, you know, and then you mix that with no sleep, and we're in Wonderland.
Where we are today, which is a daily litany of news reports of activities by people in that imbalanced state. We're going to take a break. Your call's 9429 1116. And something I want to touch on after the break is how the stakes have been raised in the addiction game. Ice, of course, raises the stakes. It wasn't prevalent 20 years ago, is that right?
That's right.
The easy availability of alcohol 24/7, gambling and its ever-growing tentacles. We need to match the availability of addictive either behavioural opportunities, as in gambling, or alcohol or drugs. We need to match the growing availability. It's as though addiction's being marketed to the community at a growing rate. That needs to be matched with an increase in recovery and rehabilitation services and awareness. If there's an imbalance there, there will be a terrible price to pay for communities, for families, for the nation. Like the right time. Welcome back to The Right Time. Some great SMSs to read out and an idea that we've workshopped here to maybe make a difference. Could we be that bold as to say we've got a bit of an idea of a way to help the ice problem, to stop the spread of the scourge of ice?
Well, I tell you what, Finey, there's a bit of an ad campaign that's been thrashed around the table here that I reckon it's a cracker. I reckon it's an absolute beauty, and I think it delivers the message that needs to be out there, and that's to destigmatise addiction, but also deal with it and don't spread the problem.
Mm.
You know, and
we know it's out there. We know that people are ice users.
Yep.
So if there was an ad campaign that directly says, we know that you have humanity and we hope that you seek an end to the problem that is your ice use. But whilst you are seeking that, or even if you don't seek that, make a pledge, don't pass the pipe.
Love
don't it. Introduce it to anybody else. Am I right in saying that this is something I only got from pop culture, that there was an honour amongst intravenous heroin users, that the honourable thing to do is never to be the person who facilitates somebody's first hit.
You're spot on. It was, you know, back in my days of using heroin, it was certainly something that you didn't want to be labelled with as being the person that's caused, you know, somebody to, or been the start of somebody's, you know, horrendous addiction.
Yeah, I have a few boys in our service at the moment that have actually got some people onto heroin or ice and so forth, and boys are in recovery, and the boys they've got onto the gear are actually really struggling. It's, and they carry this stuff as well, so it's a heavy thing to carry into recovery.
So a big nationwide campaign with bumper stickers and with T-shirts and with
TV
and with public figures, not ice users, but public figures encouraging. We have to accept that there is a generation out there of people who imbibe, whatever the term would be, who smoke.
Mm-hmm.
But let's try and create also a generation of some responsibility, because we know in addiction that addicts are not bad people. They're not, just because somebody is smoking ice doesn't mark them as a social pariah, an outcast, and devoid of civic responsibility. Take the pledge. Do it. Do to yourself what you will, but take a pledge, never pass the pipe. And it might help communities.
It's a good campaign. Let's just see if we can get some of that 45 mil out of the government and maybe just 1 mil and start the process. The right time, don't pass the pipe.
I like it a lot.
You know some heavy hitters in City Hall?
Yeah, maybe.
Possibly.
Well, why don't we try?
All right.
Why don't we aim to get the health minister in?
Yes.
And put it to the health minister.
Now we're talking turkey.
The Daniel Andrews government seems to be a proactive lot. They pride themselves on changing and attacking this problem.
Yeah, rolling with it. Yeah.
Okay.
Let's do it. Let's do it.
All right. Get the boys to make the call, or
Braden and I. We will work on it.
Yeah.
Great.
Not on Wednesday. Wednesday I'll be umpiring out at Sunbury. Thanks to Peter Cullen and Recklink, and I'm rapt to do so. Sunbury, for the first time, are fielding a team in the Recklink football competition.
Excellent.
And I'll be umpiring their first ever game.
And who are they playing?
I'm not quite sure.
Okay.
I've got it on my
Sunbury.
Phone.
Well, Sunbury need it, I can tell you.
Sunbury's a long way away.
No, it's only 45 minutes from the city.
The GPS will get me there, and I'm sure
it'll get you near it.
And I'm sure the boys and girls who play for Sunbury can't wait to get out on the footy field. And
have you blown a whistle in their ear?
Just because you rail against authority...
I can't help myself, can I?
Just because you rail against authority, Gavin, doesn't mean that everybody else does.
Sorry, fine.
And I expect nothing...
That was nice humility, Gavin, that apology you did then.
Expect nothing more or nothing less than I get from 99.9% of footballers who play for Reckling, and that is a sense of camaraderie and respect. And then there's a coach.
And then there's one.
And there's a playing coach who... Well...
His positives outweigh
his negatives.
I've handed over the reins for a few months, hopefully. So I'm just doing our running. So it's going to be even worse.
The runners are even worse if you're just focusing on that. This is all tongue in cheek. I met Gavin through his role with the Salvo Hawks, and it's a team of wonderful blokes who just love playing with the former Collingwood Premiership player. It's a buzz for them. And I'm pretty sure it was a buzz for you and important for you too, Gav.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Yeah, and I can still get a kick sometimes, so it's all right. It's good for the ego.
A bloody long kick, let me tell you. You can put on some pounds and grey hairs, but AFL footballers are AFL footballers. The bloke, you can tell the difference. Michael in Reservoir? You tell us, Michael. How do you like it pronounced?
Reservoir.
Sorry, brother. Michael in Reservoir. How are you this evening?
Oh, look, I'm halfway there and I'm halfway not. You know, look, guys, I'm bordering on 48 this year, right? I had my first beer when I was 9 years old. My old man was 22 stone. And, you know, the old Vic ads, you know, come on the telly. John Mellion, I think, at the time was doing the voiceovers and that, and it just constantly sticks through you and through you. And I've been through detox, been through rehab, and nothing changes, mate. It's a very fine line. I'm sitting here talking to you, having a durry, and I'm having a swig as well.
Michael, can I just say to you, mate, that it takes what it takes. You know, like some of us, and I'm one of those people. I went through detox and went through rehab, but I went through many. And I had one of the things I'd encourage you to do is just not give up trying to give up. You know, like keep giving it a crack. You know, and I think that's what come through for me anyway. It took me many years of trying before I got any type of recovery. You know, and I was genuinely trying as best as I could for about 9 years before I got any recovery. And but the key point is that I kept giving it a crack.
Mm.
You know, I just kept trying. And I felt possibly like you feel, which I felt dejected. I felt that there was just no hope that, you know, that whatever was working for other people isn't working for me. And but at the end of the day, I had those simple choices of, well, what do? Do I keep doing the same stuff, or do I keep trying to move forward, even though I don't seem to be getting anywhere? You know, just keep trying.
And time's a really key part of it too, Mick. As in, you may try recovery at 25 or try treatment and it doesn't work for you, so you may go out. You don't. This is not the preferred option, obviously.
Yep.
But as you said, it takes what it takes. And if you come back at a different stage and have a crack at it,
yep,
you still may not have that switch ready to go.
Yep.
You know, I was lucky that I came in and it was bang. I didn't need any more.
Yeah.
You know, but I came in as a 42-year-old. So, you know, I wasn't young, I guess. So,
yeah,
and that time can be a difference. And everyone's addiction story is different. And everyone's beginning of recovery and during their recovery journey is completely different as well. So, you know, Michael, I'm the same with Mick. I just hang in there, mate, and just keep trying the different things, you know, even if it's not a rehab or a detox and it's a 12-step meeting or different sorts of counselling or psychologists or whatever it is. Just keep putting one foot in front of the other to keep, you know, looking at it and keep trying to develop yourself.
My detox and rehab, I went through Uniting Care Regen and COVID.
Yeah.
There was a 7-day detox program and a 6-week catalyst program that I did.
Oh, yeah, I know of that.
And all was good. I abstained for the 6 weeks.
Beautiful.
I went through rehab and that, right?
Yep.
But it's like when you get home, unless you change the furniture or something, it's always going to be the same.
Yeah, so your environment's still similar. And that, mate, they say don't go back into the old environment, and it's a bit hard when your old environment's your home. You know, and also it going through any type of rehab or detox is awesome, and to get that 6 weeks up is just absolutely magical, right? So that, so it's definitely you can do it. There's no doubt about it. But what the key to this is what you do afterwards. You know, so you can go to the best rehab and detox in the world and get awesome amounts of information and get all the right stuff. But if you leave and then you've got no other support to actually put it into practice what you've learned and to continue on, then, you know, it's very, very difficult.
Is it a good thing that Michael, I know it's a bad thing short term, Michael's recovery was waylaid by a return to the environment in which he was an addict.
Yep.
But is it a good thing that recovery was stymied by something that is alterable, that is, and that Michael,
I know where you're going with that,
and that Michael is cognizant of. In other words, the repeat steps, and it might take many, many times, but if over that period adjustments are made, then maybe those impediments can be put aside. It would be worse, wouldn't it, to fail in your recovery and have no reason or understanding why you went back into your addiction?
Yeah, look, I see where you're going with that, Finey, and the answer to that is yes and no. I mean, really, the recovery, right, needs to be unconditional. So when a person recovers from addiction, it's not dependent on, you know, outside circumstances being adjusted to, you know, how we need it or want it, because life isn't like that. And as Michael was sort of talking about, and many addicts are caught in situations where they're actually not able to really get themselves a very good environment around them. They might be stuck in that situation for a little bit of time while they're getting clean. And they might not be able to make those changes, but they can actually stop using and get recovery whether or not those changes happen. But to actually recognise that there's some triggers or that there's some things that may play a part, it is important to recognise that stuff and to take it into account, for sure.
Mm. Michael, are you confident that, and I'm not saying it will succeed, are you confident that there will be, again, a concerted effort to beat your addiction?
Well, Mark, because, like, as I said, I'm bordering on 58 next month. 48, rather. And
You're a baby. I wish I was turning 48.
The way I feel about things, mate, I won't live past 50. If I keep going the way I'm going,
so you're coming
there's no way I'll see 50.
So you're coming to the turning point, Michael, you know, like, I can hear the sort of the state that you're in.
There's nothing else in my life but drink.
Yeah.
That's all I've ever known right throughout the years.
How'd you go in that 6 weeks that you were sober? How was that?
People were telling me I looked wonderful. My skin was clear.
Yep.
I was talking a lot better. My eyes were clear and bright.
Yep.
And I did. Right throughout 6 weeks, I totally abstained, as I said before.
Yep.
And I felt wonderful.
Great. Well,
you know, 2-3 weeks up when I got back home, because I've been a long sufferer of depression.
Yep.
All right, as well.
That's common.
Which doesn't help. And no. I've been on antidepressants for the last, 8-10 years. Escitalopram.
So when you when you're suffering from depression, right, and you're drinking, what you're doing is tipping a depressant down your neck, right? Yeah. So the antidepressants that you take whilst you're drinking have very limited effect, and as you know as well as I do, if you take antidepressants, that they take a certain period of time in your bloodstream before they really take effect and you get the maximum benefit. So the longer that you can stay sober, right, and to continue to take your medication, the better effect that the antidepressants will take. But what I can also tell you is that within 6 weeks of being sober, although you felt wonderful and you felt those changes, it's going to take a longer period of time than that for you to really kind of settle into that recovery, start to get to a point where you're able to, you know, kind of find that purpose in your life again.
A bit of an internal shift.
Yeah, that sort of stuff. And that's where the aftercare support is really important. And
it's almost more important than the rehab part, Mick, isn't it?
Well, it's just as important. Let's say that.
It's just such a key part to, if you want to sustain recovery, to be moving forward in it, do your rehab, whatever it may be.
Can I give you a stat?
Yeah, go for it.
So we know that in treatment, right, not everybody has to go and do 12-step fellowships.
Mm.
But we know that in treatment, if somebody does treatment and they leave treatment and they do regular frequent meetings, 12-step meetings, that they have around an 80% chance of staying clean and sober.
Mm.
We know that if a person completes treatment and they refuse to go to the 12-step meetings,
they're gone.
That those percentages come down to about 20 or 30%.
Yeah. It's interesting.
And so the basic notion is reach out and get help.
Absolutely. You can't do it on your own.
This is like walking into a maths exam and being told you can bring a calculator. You're allowed to bring a calculator
and then you don't use it.
And a mobile phone. You can use them if you want, and just say, no, I'm not going to.
Yeah, it's a good analogy.
Mm. Mm.
There are, you can't cheat your way through recovery, but you can wrap yourself up, and it does not have to cost money. You can wrap yourself up with good services, 12-step programs, and really walk through it arm in arm with other people who have either experienced it, are experiencing it, and are there to help you. And what seems, I'm sure for Michael, a lifelong lonely battle against the demon drink.
Don't do it
on your own.
And mate,
Don't do it on your own. Michael, are you still there, mate?
When I was 16, 17, I was going to AA meetings and stuff like that, right?
Good.
And, excuse me. And, after 6, 7, 8 meetings, it really started to depress me bad because I kept seeing the same people saying the same damn things.
How long ago was that, Michael?
Oh, look, probably 20 years ago.
You know what? You're in a different headspace now, my man, and you're in a more of a desperate state. And you might find that by going back there that you'll see it a different way.
You'll hear a different message.
You'll hear a different message, and I can tell you around Reservoir, there is a lot of strong AA around that area, all right, and surrounding suburbs. So that's a really strong area of town.
Which is certainly not going to guarantee anything, but it'll certainly give you support and it'll give you an ability and a connection of a network that may be able to help you get through some stuff.
Don't deprive yourself, right? Don't deprive yourself of one of the biggest mass recoveries of addiction known to man, which is 12-step groups. Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous.
And Michael, you are absolutely about to pull the pads on again. You wouldn't have rung this program if you weren't.
Mm.
You are ready to go out to bat and face a hellish fast bowler. Whack the pads on, get behind the ball, and get people around you to rally around you and support you in your fight in the innings. And if you go out, if you nick one, go back in the pavilion, stick the pads on again and have another crack, because there's no alternative, Mick. You've said what the alternative is, and that is so bloody tragic and so needless for somebody who's made the phone call. I would desperately speak to people tonight, Mick, who are in your position, who do not have the current state of mind to pick up the phone and talk to us about it. They are in a desperate state tonight, and I beg you people, if you feel like that, ring up Lifeline. The number, after 3 weeks, has slipped my mind.
131411.
Sounds right, 131411. I'll confirm it, but I'll have that after the break. But there are people, Mick, who are so desperately struck down with addiction, they would never have made the call you made tonight.
Hey, you know you can ring Alcoholics Anonymous too, and you can ring them any time of the night. There'll be somebody there that'll take your call and they'll chat to you.
13, 11, 14, if tonight you feel in that desperate situation and can't or don't wish to call us. But Mick, just in saying goodbye to you, mate, we are here every Monday night. We will make sure next public holiday we are here. And Mick and Gavin are 7 days a week available through their businesses. And I've never met you, but I'm bloody cheering for you, Mick.
I'll tell you, if I don't stop now, well, I'll be dead within 18 months, I reckon.
Well, mate, you got to get up.
So stop.
Olga, you got to get up off your Tijuana pass. You got to get yourself to some meetings and keep checking in with us. Ring in again next week.
It's not forgetting to pay a parking fine, mate. This is, it's, you are being brutally honest with yourself in a public forum. And ring in, tell us how it's going, speak to these guys off air. There is, you know, you want a battle, and we want you to succeed in that battle. And we'll do anything we can, but this is at very much an arm's length. So as much as we care and want to help your 12-step fellowships in your area, we'll physically grab you in and be part of the battle with you.
You alone can do it, but you can't do it alone. Like the
right time. All right, time's on the hoof. Let's go straight to Ray in Brookfield with a very positive message, methinks. Good evening, Ray.
Yes, good evening, boys.
Hey, Ray.
Love your show. Love your show. Gavin, Mick, and I think this is, you guys are doing something that, you know, I believe a lot of other radio stations should be doing as well.
Why not? One hour a week. That's all they need to devote.
That's it. Yeah, I've got, look, I owe my life to a 12-step program. Tonight, on the run home for me from my home group 12-step program, I listen to you boys, and that really tops the night all for me. But I've been clean and sober now for 33 years, one day at a time. And I love it. And, you know, just listening to, I believe, Michael, the last caller, you know, one thing that can be offered to him is hope, that there is hope. He just needs to, that there's hope there. He can get better.
And the rewards are substantial, aren't they, Ray? It's not. Michael seemed to say without drinking he didn't have a lot left in his life, but it's a whole new horizon.
That's where it is, though. When you're in the depths of that addiction, and I think it's exactly what Ray is saying, there is no hope whatsoever. And if you can just see a glimmer of it,
yep.
And if you can take that step towards it, it just gets brighter and brighter.
It really takes a little bit of time to materialise sometimes, but it does materialise.
Mm. Good on you, Ray.
Good on you, Ray. You're a legend.
Hey, Ray, you're a gun. And I think he runs home from his meetings.
Yeah.
A fit gun. Let's go to Mike in Heathmont very quickly. Unfortunately, Mike, we don't have a lot of time, but we can start tonight and certainly welcome you to call back next week as well.
Yeah, love to do that. I called on the end of, halfway through Michael's comments, and I'm a little old wonky radio here. I've got to hold my finger on it to get any sound. Anyway, that's beside the point. I've been going to Shaw, which is Substance Use Recovery Eastern in part of each Eastern Access.
Oh, yeah, yep.
Had major depression disorder, which I'm in recovery from. And part of that, they said, was like a lot of men, I suppose, maybe that's a generalisation, was drink to, try to solve the problem. And that doesn't work. And I'm on the DSP, and tonight was going to be the first night that I wouldn't go out and buy beer. That was the target, and then it just hit me, and then in the end I did. But, and I've been told don't be down on myself, but I've had 4 VB cans and 4 Jim Beam and cola cans, but that's from about 6:30 to now. Normally that would have been a lot more. Yep. And at the same time, I was at Savers, the op shop, and I bought a jacket and then I bought a belt. I'd been to shopping at different op shops in Croydon just looking before I had any money, and I've got to go back and buy some pairs of jeans tomorrow. And a thing I've been working on with Fiona, my current counsellor, it's like,
hey, Mike, have you tried AA meetings?
No, because I've had three different counsellors for about 2 years, and the looking at total different things. Like earlier this year,
Mike, we've run out of time, and this seems brutal. And certainly, if you want to continue the discussion, just hang on to the line. Mick, are you happy to have a quick chat?
I'll have a quick chat, yeah,
with Mike off air. But Mike, how about next week you ring in? It sounds like there's a lot to discuss there. There's a story there. How about you whack those jeans that you buy this week with the money you save from what you don't drink on next week? It's a positive step forward. My fur coat it is, and you might get one of them as well. Give us a call next week, and that story will be shared by two experts in Gavin Krasiska and Mick Hall, and maybe a bit of steering on the bus, which is certainly well-intentioned and headed in the right direction. Mike, thanks for calling in. Hang on to the line, though. That's it, boys. We've run over. We have to end it there, but
it's a good one, Finey.
You know what's interesting? Through this enormous public and governmental attack on ICE, Jeff Kenner came out and said very pointedly, alcohol remains the biggest problem in this community, and our three callers tonight backed that up.
They did.
There is no one single addictive substance that overrides the notion of addiction itself. We'll be back next week, the right time, back on a Monday night, every Monday night.